Hey everyone, welcome to day two of Free Thought Fest. Thank you all for coming again. Once again, I'm Mike. I'm an officer at AHA. Once again, today's theme is Fight Back. You can grab your brochures if you want to see who the speakers are. You can visit freethoughtfestival.org to look up the speaker biographies. You can also look up the schedule and our harassment policy, as well as a bunch of other awesome information, including videos from last year. And again, this is being recorded, so you can watch the videos later on, if you please. I'd like to welcome, she's the managing director and in-house counsel for American Atheists. She recently authored the book, The Citizen Lobbyist, a how-to manual for making your voice heard in government. Please welcome Amanda Kniff.
Good morning. Oh, come on. Good morning. There we go. I work for David Silverman. How many of you know who David Silverman is? So I have to have a lot of energy and pep, and I expect my audiences to at least meet me halfway on that. So I spend a lot of my time corralling his ideas, not stopping them, just trying to keep them within the bounds of the law. So I actually have a little dog with me named Sagan, and a couple of people were kind enough to offer to watch her, and they had to leave. However, no one else is allowed to leave. This is a very important presentation. So if you leave, I will call you out on it, and anyone else who comes in is fair game. So just so you know. I was stuck at the airport in Newark for 7 hours and still showed up here, and then have to leave. While I was waiting for the flight to get me here, my other flight rang me in. So I apologize, I'm speaking and dashing. I don't normally do that, but we have this huge conference coming up, the American Atheist 50th Anniversary National Conference in Austin over Easter weekend, and I know none of you do anything over Easter, you're atheists. So you should get your asses down there and come hang out, 53 speakers. We have the first annual art show and auction. We're going to have a free rock concert. We have a comedy show, costume party, a huge birthday cake I can't tell you anything more about. It's going to be a really good time. So you should go to atheist.org and look that up and come have a good time with us. So the topic at hand, the golden calf, why the faith-based initiative needs to be sacrificed. I think it says exterminated in your book, and I was trying to think which was a better word, and so I gave Chris exterminated, but I went back to my original sacrifice because it fits more within my theme. So a little bit of biblical history to give you context behind this. According to Hebrew and Christian Bibles, Aaron, brother of Moses, created a golden calf. I'm not sure where he found the gold in the desert, but whatever. While Moses was away on Mount Sinai talking to the burning bush or having delusions of grandeur, whichever. And when Moses came back, he was so enraged that the Israelites were worshiping an idol because, you know, before there they didn't have any rules, but now there were these rules on these tablets. And so according to Moses, the calf was doubly wrong because, first of all, it represented a physical interpretation of God, and also it was idolatry. So, you know, as we've seen before, God makes up the rules and then punishes you afterwards. At least we don't do that, right, in modern society? So this matters how. Well, I'm going to ask you to go on a journey of make-believe with me. We're going to pretend the faith-based initiative is the golden calf, that religious organizations and institutions are the Israelites, and that I am Moses, something they wouldn't let me do when I was in Sunday school. And I'm going to bring the word of God in the form of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And together we're going to destroy the money-sucking, self-congratulatory program posing as legitimate public policy known as the Faith-Based Initiative. How does that sound? And I want you to know that the land of make-believe does exist in New Jersey. I found that sign when I was driving there the first time. Okay, so where we stand today. According to the Office of Faith-Based Neighborhood Partnerships, a church, mosque, synagogue may apply for faith-based funds from the state or federal government without a separate charitable purpose. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that if you're a church, synagogue, whatever, and I'm going to say church mostly because that is where a disproportionate amount of the money goes, okay? So I'm not actually trying to discriminate against synagogues and Muslims. I think they're all equally opportunistic, awful, okay? But I'm just going to pick on churches today. A church can apply for a grant, And they don't have to have a separate charitable purpose, like a soup kitchen or whatever. They can just say, because I'm a 501c3 church, I am a charity and I can get this funding. Now, they have to put a reason down on the grant. They can say, oh, we're going to give money to, we want this money so that we can provide funding for the homeless or whatever. And as long as it looks good on paper, that's all they need, okay? They don't have to publicly report how they spend the money. Because churches, under IRS rules and regulations and law, don't have to file Form 990s, how many of you are involved in any kind of 501c3? Okay, all of you need to be involved in some sort of 501c3 charitable organization, because atheists have terrible reputations when it comes to volunteering. And you would learn very quickly how biased the system is against churches, or for churches, and other religious organizations. Once they apply to be an organization, a 501c3 charity, they pretty much get a free pass to whatever they want. They get registered under the IRS, and after that, they don't have to report anything. Okay? They just get to go and do whatever they want, and they don't have to tell the government how they're spending their money. They don't have to report to taxpayers where the money is going. And every other 501c3, whether it's an academic group, a charitable group that's not religious, an educational group like American Atheists or the American Humanist Association, every other group, you know, that Charity Navigator looks at, they all have to report these 990s, and that's where most of that information comes from. So these organizations that then get money from the government through the faith-based initiative take that money, and there is no public reporting back, which sucks. Furthermore, these organizations are allowed to discriminate in who they hire, and they can fire you at any time for religious reasons. So if you're, for example, working for the Salvation Army and have been for 20 years, and the Salvation Army is a church. That is how they are organized under the law. And George W. Bush passes an executive order that says churches can discriminate based on religious preference. And the Salvation Army goes through and has everyone do a questionnaire that says, what are your values and what is your religious preference? And you put down that, oh, well, you're Jewish, you could be fired. And maybe you were. And let's say you decide to sue against that. And the government says, well, you know what? Now there's this executive order that says that they can do that under faith-based initiatives. And you're out of a job. And it happened. And it happened if you were a homosexual and you answered honestly, or if they suspected you were a homosexual. So don't give money to the Salvation Army. That's just my personal belief. It has nothing to do with American Atheists. So billions of dollars are being doled out through the faith-based initiative. Billions of dollars. Through in the Bush administration, which was the last time we got an accurate account, we knew that this was happening. There are now dozens of offices with the sole purpose in the states and in the federal government that are just designed to get this money out, and it all comes through the executive branch. So how does this work exactly? How are they getting away with this? Because if you're not pissed off right now, you should be. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 said it was unlawful for an employer to fail or refuse to hire or discharge any individual because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. And religion includes atheists. So I do this whole talk about discrimination in the workplace against and by atheists. And I always ask people, does religion cover atheism? Is atheism a religion? And of course, we don't think of atheism as a religion. But under the law, we are protected as a religion. Because just like if you don't speak, if you are in a protest and you're not speaking, that's your protest, you are covered by the freedom of speech. So it's the same kind of analogy, same kind of thing. Because we choose not to have religion, we are still covered by freedom from religion and freedom of religion. It's our choice not to have religion, so we get the same protections as someone who chooses to be a Rastafarian or Scientologist or whatever. Does that make sense? So it's very important to keep track of that, that whenever you are protected, when someone is protected by religion and the law, that includes atheists. Okay? So it's the one time you don't want to frown at it, because someone was frowning at me in the audience. Title VII exemption for church groups and faith-based organizations allowed them to discriminate in hiring practices in order to maintain their organization's integrity. Now, I don't think they have any integrity to begin with, but let's not quibble about the law. This traditionally referred to the actions of the organization when using their own money, okay? So a really easy example of this, and I hate to bring it up because I might get really upset, but it's the priests in the Catholic Church. Okay? It's their integrity to keep only men being hired as priests in the Catholic Church, because that's part of what makes them the Catholic Church. It's what makes them awful, but okay, you know, that's their choice. So it's that kind of thing that allowed them to have that kind of discrimination. It wasn't supposed to be this wholesale blanket discrimination, okay? But that's what it was, that kind of thing. And it was using their own money. Now, there are two rather well-known gentlemen up here, and I'm excited to say that the top one, I've been doing genealogy. He is my fourth cousin, 12 times removed, on my grandfather's side. I have no idea if I'm related to the other one, but just wanted to throw that in. FDR used executive orders for the first time to prevent discrimination. And this was during World War II, when they were revving up manufacturing, and there was discrimination by defense contractors. And FDR was like, screw that, we need everybody we can get into the factories, anybody who wants to do this and kill people using, you know, manufacturing, and allow us to go over and do that. So he based it on race, religion, color, or national origin with an executive order. LBJ then extended that to all federal contracting, okay? So if you were getting money from the federal government for any purpose, he prevented any kind of employment discrimination to all government contracts. So in the last 70, 75 years, they've only used executive orders to prevent discrimination until the 90s. And then we had charitable choice. And we had this really great guy from Missouri who used to be a senator, and then he lost his race to a dead guy whose wife then got the job. And he became our attorney general, and he didn't like Liberty Justice, so he covered her breasts, the thing with a cloth, because, yeah, you know who I'm talking about, right? Somebody shout it out. Thank you. And he had written this law while he was in office as a senator. And what it did was it altered existing law, and this was in the Welfare Act, to allow taxpayered social services to go to funding of houses of worship in some welfare programs. So this was the first time in law. So before this, let's say you have Catholic Charities. That's something that almost everybody here knows about, right? We're not exactly sure how it works, but we all have heard of it. Okay, and like Lutheran services, charitable services. Okay, so before this, if you wanted to be a charitable religious organization, you had to form a separate 501c3 from the church. So the church is its own organization, and it wants to run a soup kitchen, or it wants to run a homeless shelter, or whatever it wants to do. It had to form a separate 501c3 if it wanted government money from the state or the federal money. If it wanted your money to do its charitable work outside of the church, it had to form its own organization. Wasn't onerous, same kind of charitable regulations that the American Red Cross goes through, that any charitable organization is subject to, that charitable organization had to do. We're not giving it the same easy pass that churches get. We're just asking that just because you have religious bent, that you form your own charitable group and you go through the same requirements that any secular religious group goes through. Okay? But that changed. Now a church could say, oh, well, we're running a daycare, and we no longer want to run it as a 501c3 separate. We're going to merge it, and we're going to apply for some of these welfare programs that are helping mothers get back to work, and we're going to bring it all under one roof. And the reason why that was problematic for many of us who fight for secularism is because now the money is fungible. Now there's no way to track it, because that separate 501c3 is trackable with the Form 990. The public can see where the money is being spent, how it's working. But when you bring it in with the church, you can't track it, because churches don't have to file that Form 990. Now, supposedly, there's processes for this. Of course, supposedly, the federal government and states have these lengthy grant applications, and they have to report back. But if you've ever, and I dare you to do this, if you've ever tried to track grant money through any state or federal database, it's exhausting and it's hard, and trying to get an answer from any bureaucrat or any government employee it's worse than hard. It's ridiculous. And filing Freedom of Information Acts, trying to get that information, if you don't do it just right, we have yet to get the information. And there are groups in DC trying to do it. So this was the first time it happened, and they wiped it out. And then under Bush, charitable choice became faith-based initiative. And the first thing he did was create the White House Office of Community and Faith-Based Initiatives, and he created 9 federal departments where they could do this federally through the executive branch. Executive money was doing this. And then finally, they took the anti-discrimination away. So if you're in Georgia and you have a county that's running a drug rehabilitation program, and it's run by a Catholic group, and you need a counselor, and there aren't a dozen people signing up, but you only have one applicant to be a counselor for this program, and you have dozens of people who are needing the services. You have one person signed up for it to interview who's qualified. And the person comes in, and they interview. And towards the end, they ask you one last question. They say, by the way, what religion are you? And you're a little startled, but you say, well, I'm Jewish. Well, thank you for coming in, but you're not qualified. And you're like, excuse me? Well, we only hire Catholics. That seems wrong, doesn't it? Intuitively, right? And up until the Bush administration, it would have been wrong. It would have been illegal under federal law and under the executive orders. But because of Bush, it's allowed. And even though the Obama administration says they're going to look at these kinds of things on a case-by-case basis, it's going on. Now, in this particular case, the gentleman who was Jewish fought it, and he won in state court. But we don't know how many times this is happening. And it's ridiculous. Why, when someone who has the same goals as you wants to help people, would you want to stop them if they were the most qualified person? Just because they don't share the same religious creed as you? It's simple discrimination. Okay, so where we are now, President Obama said, I don't like this. In 2008, he said he would not allow discrimination to continue with federal money, unlike the Bush administration. However, once he got into office, he unveiled his new Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. He did not reverse the controversial policies. And Josh Dubois, who up until about a month ago was running the office, stated that claims of discrimination would be investigated on a case-by-case basis. And CARD, which is the Coalition Against Religious Discrimination, which a whole bunch of the organizations that many of your local groups, your national organizations belong to, the Secular Coalition for America, and Secular Coalition for America is a member of CARD. CARD has been trying to get information about this policy from the Attorney General's office and from the legal offices of all the 14 groups, agencies and departments in the executive branch to find out what's going on. And none of their responses have been, none of their letters, their inquiries have been responded to. As of late 2011, they were talking about doing Freedom of Information Act requests, but once you do that, they consider that a hostile action in some cases, and you lose relationships with people. So it's one thing to come from citizens. It's another thing when you're a lobbyist and an organization that has to work with people day in and day out to file these kinds of requests. So I have 28 minutes, and I'm going to show you a video. And this isn't to make me look good, but to show you that no one had been able to talk to Obama about this. This was not on the radar. And we were able to do this because I went to a town hall meeting in Maryland right before he kicked off his campaign. And nobody thought that he would call on me because I'm not a Democratic supporter, and I wasn't, you know, everyone figured that they had the people picked out ahead of time. But I went, because I was invited by the White House to go to this, and I sat at the bottom of a tier in this big gymnasium of bleachers, and I had my question ready, and when he finished his speech, he went, okay, I'm gonna do the Q&A, and I'm gonna go girl, boy, girl, and I shot up out of my seat with my hand in the air, and I was on his left side, and he's left-handed, and he went, okay, you, and I'm like, yes! And I I swear the man hates me now. I've had two opportunities to shake his hand since then, and he has avoided me. He's like gone right past me to shake other people's hands. But this is what we did, and I'm going to let it play because he is one of the smartest men I think we've had in office. He is a constitutional scholar. He knows his stuff. He's a Christian. He was raised by a humanist. He's very well-versed in this area. And just listen to his answer. They kept trying to make me sit down, and I wouldn't. So C-SPAN kept coming back to me. So, yeah. How many of you thought that made any sense whatsoever? No. Okay. Yeah, he's full of shit. And I, you know, think that he's done many good things as president, kind of, but here we go. All right. So, the Bush administration spent more than $1 billion through the faith-based initiative. $1 billion. Politico found in 2011 that at least $140 million in stimulus money went to faith-based groups. And this was during the Obama administration. So it was an unpublicized campaign that they tried to actually give government money to supporting religious nonprofits, not secular nonprofits, religious nonprofits. Federal agencies in conference calls and online seminars instructed faith groups how to get these grants. And federal officials actually stepped in when state agencies wouldn't do it. They would distribute the money to groups with churches and other religious organizations when the state said, we want this money to go to other places. We think it would be better spent on infrastructure projects and things like that that directly go to the people, not to religious organizations. And the executive branch officials stepped in and actually directed the money to federal government, to churches. And President Obama continues to push the faith-based initiative. He mentioned it specifically in his convention speech before the election in North Carolina. But the bigger question is why did Bush create the faith-based initiative, and why hasn't... Okay, it fell apart again. All right, hold on. All right, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. And why hasn't Obama rescinded Bush's executive orders regarding proselytizing and discrimination? And this is my conspiracy theory, but I think it actually has facts, so this is why we're in the land of make-believe a little bit. The faith-based initiative creates a government-funded method to entice votes for whomever is in the White House in a completely separate funding stream from election campaigns, and in such a way that it is almost impossible to track, critique, or prove the two are connected. What Bush did and what the religious right found was that if you can separate the executive branch money and you can funnel it to faith-based groups, you have then leaders of these groups that are incentivized to talk to their congregations and get them to vote for whoever is giving them the money. You are giving them government money to improve their churches, to give them money to then talk to homeless people, to run shelters, to run soup kitchens, to run daycares, which they then charge for, the daycares, and other businesses that they can run. Catholic hospitals. Catholic organizations run 20% of this nation's healthcare system. In Arizona, it's more than 50%. And so this money goes to those clinics. It goes to the healthcare system. These grants go for this kind of thing. It's not just the small mom and pop church that runs the small food pantry. We're talking big grants as well. They are also in the other executive departments and agencies pushing money to renovate churches to make them more green. They're sending money to give them new boilers, to put in better windows, to fix roofs. And they just passed a new bill or a part of the bill to give them money when their churches and other religious buildings are damaged by disaster. Now, I appreciate the role that many of these places play in community. But if your church is damaged, you should have insurance. And two, you should pay for it yourself. And if your church needs a new roof, that's what your congregation's for. You're not serving the community wide enough that we should be paying for it. But if you can get the government to send you this money, it's a quid pro quo. Because We all know the IRS is not going after pastors that are preaching from the pulpit, are they? No. Now, there is a huge number of pastors, evangelical and others, who were not for President Obama, correct? But what you didn't hear is how many thousands of churches and pastors were, and how many of them were getting out the vote for Obama. All you heard about were the ones that were protesting and making noise against him. You can't track the faith-based initiative funds right now. There's no GBO study. There's no Congressional Budget Office, not GBO, CBO study about it. We've tried to get the numbers through CARD and the Secular Coalition. We can't get the numbers from them. When they do all of their grants, they just list them. They don't separate out the faith-based ones. And sometimes the names are misleading, so we can't track it. And it's been since 2009, when the Bush numbers came out officially, that we actually knew when they were. There's no way to track how the religious organizations are actually spending the money. Now, the federal departments and agencies will say grant money is always tracked. You can't misspend government money. You can't misspend government money? Yeah, okay. So there's no way to find out, once the money goes into the church, how it's spent. And, you know, isn't it reasonable that if you're going to do a soup kitchen, you need to renovate the church to make room, right? And maybe it needs a new roof because you wouldn't want it leaking on those people who are coming in. Or if you're going to run a food pantry, maybe you need a new kitchen. Or you need to renovate the back of the church. Or you need to buy a new building. Or maybe you need to buy a new church. So there's no way to know how the money is spent. And I am not saying that a majority of the religious groups are misusing the money. I'm just saying we don't know, because there's no way of tracking it. And that's part of the reason they do it this way, because then they don't have to be accountable. But if they're spending our money, federal tax dollars, state money, that's our money, then we should know how they're spending it. And there's no method to track the religious discrimination on the case-by-case basis. They're not giving us any indication if they're receiving these kind of complaints, as in the example from Georgia and the drug program in one county. They're not giving us those. If they don't come to lawsuit, if there are no complaints filed in public forums, we're not finding out about them. It did used to be better. For decades, religious organizations provided social services, including in some cases with the use of government funds, without faith-based initiative. But faith-based initiative allows proselytization in a secular government-funded program and permits employment discrimination. But any program that can be funded under the faith-based initiative could have been funded before the faith-based initiative if the organization agreed not to discriminate in employment and not to proselytize. There were all those separate 501c3s. And no religious organization has come before Congress and said that it needs to proselytize or discriminate in order to be successful. They just want to. I want to do a lot of things. That doesn't mean I should be able to, right? So the issue of whether discrimination with federal funds should be permitted remains debated. But the Obama administration has shut this down pretty well. After the first 18 months of the first term, they kind of dropped the faith-based initiative from anything. They haven't nominated anyone to their council. They had this really big group of people, really well-known names of religious leaders, talk about what they should do to revise it. And they came out with a paper that said, these are all the things that we say you should do. And it said, take out the proselytizing, separate the organizations, create the 501c3s again. And the Obama administration has done none of it, and they haven't put in a new set of advisors. They've just kind of shut it down. So how do we stop it? It's very difficult. We can't sue over it. FFRF tried, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said that we didn't have standing as people, as citizens, because it's executive branch money and not congressional money. So we can't sue. All you can do is complain. make noise, become a citizen lobbyist about it. Talk about how the money could be misspent, how you need to cast, you know, questions about it. Where's the money going? And it needs to be on a local level, on a state level, because it's much harder to get to the federal one. But we all have state offices of faith-based initiatives. Every state does. And I bet you guys don't even know that. So it's this really well-kept secret. So you need to find it and talk to them. And sometimes it's within a department. It's not its own separate department. But like Health and Human Services will have it, or some other group will have it. You need to find out. Ask them, what's your methodology? How many grants have you given out? Where's the paperwork? How are you tracking it? Because all this information from the government should be open record. We should be able to get our hands on it. We may not be able to track the churches by law, but by law we should be able to get all the information from the government. Houses of worship are better off using their own money, because if you use government money, that means the government has a say in how you use it and what you're supposed to do with it. Now, they're not exercising that control right now, but the whole point of separation of church and state is not just to protect the government, but it's to protect the churches. We don't want the government telling people how to practice their religion. We don't want them telling us that we have to be religious. So sometimes religious people don't see the other side of it, that if the government gives you money, they can also tell you what you can and cannot do with that money. And so people like Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United and Reverend Welton Gaddy, who runs the Interfaith Alliance, are very keen on reminding people, religious people especially, that when you take money from the government, you're sacrificing your independence. And we don't want that to happen. Okay. So, real quick plug. I wrote a book. This is based on a lecture that I do, a seminar on grassroots lobbying. And it's coming out this year. In July. And so if you want to get more active, if you want to do things about the faith-based initiative, if you want to get involved and talk to your representatives, this is a great how-to do it. And I'm not just saying that, it really is. it teaches you how to do that. So I'm going to plug that. You can find it on Amazon and pre-order it, or wait for it to come out. And yeah, cool. This is how you can reach me. I work for American Atheists. There's my email and my Twitter. I don't Twitter often, but when I do, it's hilarious. Mostly I do political events, and I think I have about 10 minutes for questions, and I'd be happy to take them. But again, the big thing to push for is not that religious organizations don't help people, they do, but to give them the separate 501c3 again, and to demand that they do it. It is not going to come from the federal government, because they have this great pipeline of money that they can send to churches and get those people incentivized to get people to vote for them. And that's why I think nothing is going to happen. If you could do that, wouldn't you? I mean, it's just basic human nature. We all think we're above it, but I think when Obama got into office and he saw there was this great machine that existed to generate goodwill, and if he cut it off, he'd have millions of people pissed off at him, and then a few people who are organized would say, "Great, we love you." It just didn't balance out on the scales. So the best way to fight it is to say separate and equal, and just ask them to go back to the way it was. You can have the money, but just do it as a 501c3, so we can have the accountability and the tracking. Thank you. I'm not exactly sure what your question is. Religious schools.
My concern is, as advocates locally, we could be insisting, even if we can't stop this voucher thing completely, we could say we insist that documentation be applied so that we can see the separate money for the, you know what I mean? What brought this up was a kind of a rude comment someone made on my Facebook.
Okay, so I don't mean to be rude, but I only have a few minutes for questions, and you ask the question, I'm going to try and answer it, but then we need to let someone else ask.
Sorry.
It's okay. So the way voucher programs work is vouchers go to the students, and that's I don't know what the line item in Scott Walker's bill is, but that's how most voucher programs work. And so notoriously, they are hard to track. They are usually filled with corruption, and they are aimed at religious schools that often will shoot their tuition to the exact amount of the voucher, and then the religious organization will backfill whatever the tuition cost is behind it, so that any kind of secular private school that might also work for the voucher program has no opportunity to have access to the students as well, or a parent who wants their child to go to a private school that's non-religious can still not afford the tuition. So as far as the schools, the religious schools themselves, who then would receive this money and how would you prove that they're using it in which ways, that depends on state law. And that's very different than the faith-based initiative. It's still fruit, but they're apples and oranges. So it would depend on what state law is.
All right, and just a reminder, please keep your question brief.
And for those of you who just walked in, what, you didn't think my topic was important enough? And where's Ben? Because he owes me $20.
Hi, you mentioned faith-based organizations discriminating in hiring. Is there also instances where they're discriminating in providing services? And is anyone trying to track that, or has that come up?
Okay, so the question is, are faith-based organizations discriminating and providing services? One of the things that they're allowed to do is they're allowed to proselytize. So for example, if you want a hot meal because you are poor or homeless, but you don't want to listen to the sermon before you get your hot meal, they can turn you away. Now, this isn't supposed to happen. They're supposed to then refer you to a secular organization that would provide you with a hot meal without the proselytizing. But in many areas, there's only one place that's offering the hot meal, so you can go hungry. So yes, in that way, they are discriminating in what they're doing. There isn't, I don't think, a single church organization that's going to turn away anybody who they might be able to proselytize to. I haven't heard of that, but they will deny you if you're not allowing them to proselytize to you.
What do you think are the top five most notorious faith-based initiatives?
You mean organizations or?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think the Salvation Army is one of them. I think that they are notorious for discriminating not only with the money they get from the government, but then they purge their ranks after they were allowed to by the executive order that Bush put into place. They was taken to court and it was ruled that they could do it. And they do discriminate in who they help. I should actually, that's a caveat to the question beforehand. They discriminate against some people based on religion, and also there is some discrimination against homosexuals. So I would say that's the number one. Also, Catholics. Catholic hospitals are notorious. You, in 20% of this nation's healthcare system, a woman cannot go to a hospital and get comprehensive care. She cannot get a gynecological exam without knowing her options. She cannot get comprehensive birth control options. She cannot know about getting sterilization. A man cannot get sterilization procedures. There are certain cancer treatments that a woman and a man will not find out about if it will affect their reproductive options. So you're not getting the full story if you go to a Catholic hospital about what's going on with your health care. So there's two.
Do you think that function that the White House website has, where you can request a response to a certain topic if you get enough signatures on a petition, do you think that would be a helpful thing to do to get the rescind of the...
Oh, the faith-based... Okay, so she's asking about We the People. Yeah. Okay, my timer's done. Do I have a couple more minutes since we started late?
Yeah, 300.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Thank you. She wants to know about We the People, which is where if you get, I think, 25,000 signatures, is that right? Is it still... Did it go up? Okay, so if you get that many signatures, they may deign to respond. But considering that they're responding to Death Stars rather than serious political topics right now, I don't think it will matter. They have responded to other things in the past, but no, I don't think it would matter at this point. It really is, you have to look at why are they keeping it? What is the point? Why are they allowing this to go on? One, they got the Supreme Court to say we have no standing to sue. So we are effectively barred from going after the money in the executive branch. Remember, we still have standing in Congress, according to the Supreme Court, but right now we're barred from going after them and suing in the executive branch. And two, it's a pipeline of money, and if you can get the board members and the church leaders to side with you by funneling money to them, it's a captive audience. You're incentivizing them to be on your side, and they have a lot of influence in their communities. So it's where maybe it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but I've spent a lot of time looking into this. Why are they still doing it? And I think this is why. When you have someone like Obama, who was so adamant before and throughout his career about separation of church and state, and then once he gets into office, I think he went, well, shit, you know? And now he's stuck. And he has continued the process, and I don't think you're going to see a change in a second term because he wants another Democrat in the office when he leaves. I think he feels he owes it to his party. So I think we are stuck with this awful, awful golden calf. And the best we can hope for is to get that 501c3 back, to keep them all honest, and so that we know how our money is being spent. And I think that's the way to do it.
Right, one more.
And I will be outside, and I will be happy to answer questions, even though Andrew gives an awesome talk, and I don't think you should miss it. But I do have to leave and go back to New Jersey, and I apologize I couldn't stay longer. This is a great conference.
You mentioned that we can't sue because we don't have standing. Could you explain what that means?
It means we all sit on our asses too much. No. Okay, so standing in federal court, in any court, means that you have, it gets a little complicated with legalese, but what it means is that you have the right. In the U.S. system, anybody is supposed to be able to walk in and be able to sue for their rights, okay, and to enforce them. In this particular case, and I won't get it, it's Hine versus FFRF. You can look it up. And what they were looking for was to stop the faith-based initiative. And what the court said was that we didn't have standing. And standing means that the grounds upon which they were trying to sue did not have enough merit. And it was a sucky decision. but Supreme Court sucks right now, so please don't put that in the tape. I don't remember. I don't remember what the vote was. Basically, if you go in and you want to sue your neighbor, for property line dispute, you actually have to have a property line that's in dispute, okay? If you're trying to sue the neighbor two houses over for a property line dispute, you'd get thrown out for standing because you don't actually have a property line dispute. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's what standing means, is you actually have to have an issue that's in dispute, and you have to be the person who is actually part of that decision. And basically what they were saying is because the money was the executive branch's and not Congress's, there is no way for us to sue how the executive branch spends its money. It's beyond the purview of taxpayers. And I'm not exactly sure how that works because it's all federal money, and I'm pretty sure I pay the president's salary, but at least, you know, 1/365 millionth of it, so. Okay, you guys have been great. I really appreciate the questions, and enjoy the rest of the conference.